Thank you very much.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. My name is Cass. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 6th, 1990. And the credit for that goes to the men and women in Alcoholics Anonymous who, for fun and for free, gave me hours of their time. But most importantly, to my higher power, who has kept me sober. This book is especially important to me because the only reason I'm sober is because when I got sober in a small town in upstate New York in which women were not getting sober. The men were, but the women were not. They were constantly going out. And their lives were constantly a mess. Now, again, remember, I'm talking a small town. This is in rural upstate New York. And there were about 10 meetings that we were able to go to in neighboring towns. By the grace of God, I found the one woman who knew the book Alcoholics Anonymous and had done her steps out of this book. And that woman had a male for a sponsor. She had 5 years sobriety, and she's noticing women aren't getting sober, but she's noticing the men are. And so she approached a man, and he agreed to take her through the steps. And it was just pure luck that I got to her, because I didn't know what I was new. I didn't know what I was going to do. And what she did was she took me through this book, word by word, page by page. And when it said stop, we stopped. When it said pray, we prayed. And it took, well, with her, I got to my fifth step. And that's as far as I got, because I was only with her for a year. It took about 2 years to finish this book at that time. All right, and the way she approached this book with me was that you had to follow it exactly the way it was laid out. And the chapters I'm doing, Two Wives, The Family Afterwards, and To the Employer, are very often known as the forgotten chapters. Because you read them, everybody reads them, but very often, no attention is paid to the instructions that are in here. So hopefully, I'm going to give you a little bit of my experience with this. The chapter opens up talking about what we did to others. So that's where I'm on page 104. What's important about what we did to others? It's not a repetition. It's a good example for us to look at what we did to the people around us. It told me exactly what I did to my mother, what I did to my friends, what I did to my husband. These were the things that it did for me. And what I discovered was these chapters are teaching me about how to have a relationship with a man, a female, a dog, a cat. It doesn't make any difference. How to have relationships. And the foundation of the relationship is don't lie. If you can't be trusted, if your word can't be trusted, you can be ignored. And my sponsor took it to an extreme. I mean, I wasn't even allowed to do, nice lies. Like, are you fat? Do I look fat in this dress? No, that wasn't even allowed. It was find another way. But don't answer the question. And I can tell you from experience, it worked for me. I was working in the publishing field, and I was an editor, and I had a production assistant. And the boss called me into the office and said, your copy was late again. And I said, no, it wasn't. It came in on time. And so she left the room. She called in the production manager. And she said to the production manager, Cass said her copy was in on time, and she doesn't lock. And I thought the woman was going to drop. And the reason she knew I didn't lie is because when I screwed up, and when you're an editor, you screw up all the time. I would admit it. One time I had a spelling error in my banner headline, and the president of the company is holding it up and screaming in front of everyone. How the hell did we get a spelling error in a banner headline, Bansy? And I looked at him and I said, I'm a lousy copy editor. I take full responsibility. And he didn't know what to say. He said, it was like, well, don't do it again. And it establishes you as what kind of person you are. And it was one of the things that I did with my husband also, who was in the program. I told him, I said, I'll always tell you the truth, and please don't lie to me. If you don't want to answer the question, don't answer the question. And there were sometimes that's what he said. And we had a really good relationship for 14 years until he passed away. All right, so this first section is all about what we did to others. And in this section, you can figure out what your amends are. And if you go to page 106, it starts talking about intimate relationships. It talks about the partner in the marriage. It talks about children. And I know I was divorced at the time I came into the program. And I had two children. And I know I hurt them with my drinking. And they never saw me drunk. I was sober. I didn't get sober until my daughter was, I don't remember her age. I'm sorry, I'm suffering from long COVID. But they never really saw me drunk, but I was still an alcoholic. And the fine-tuning of my program wasn't there as they were growing up. And when he talks here, he says, on page 106, perhaps I'm in the next to the last paragraph, perhaps at this point we got a divorce and took the children home to father and mother. Then we were severely criticized by our husband's parents for desertion. Usually we did not leave, we stayed on. Now remember, this is the wives supposedly talking. It's actually Bill Wilson who wrote this chapter. Okay? How many times do we do this in our current relationships? We stay in relationships longer than we should. It's natural to do that. But where alcohol is concerned, the devastation that we bring to the people around us is overwhelming. Okay, and it also talks in this chapter about abuse. And it's on page 115. I'm sorry, it starts on the previous page. And it talks about the fact that very often in an intimate relationship, abuse is involved. It may be physical, but it is definitely mental. And we stay in the relationship longer than we should. And it says on page 14, on page 114, it says, when they become, some men cannot or will not get over alcoholism. When they become too dangerous, we think the kind thing to do is to lock them up. But of course, a good doctor should always be consulted. The wives and children of such men suffer horribly, but not more than the men themselves. Bill will always apologize for our alcoholic behavior. But sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such a woman adopts a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. If your husband is a drinker, you probably worry over what other people are thinking. And you hate to meet your friends. And you hate to meet your friends. You draw more and more into yourself, and you think everyone is talking about conditions in your home. People are always going to be criticizing us, and that's neither here nor there. The point is, what are we going to do about the relationship? If you stay in a bad relationship too long, it doesn't get better, it gets worse. And I know there are some women who were in bad relationships with the man, and they would stay in it, but as soon as the abuse was transferred to the children, they would leave. It took that much. And then there are others who stay anyway. And the other thing that happens in relationships, which is very common, is that the alcoholic will ask the others, their partner, to lie for them. Like, tell the boss I'm hungover, I'm not coming in. Tell the boss, I got a cold. And what the book says specifically is, don't engage in lying. Frequently, you have been obliged to tell your husband's employer and his friends that he was sick when, as a matter of fact, he was tight. Avoid answering these inquiries as much as you can. Wherever possible, let your husband explain. Your desire to protect him should not cause you to lie to people when they have a right to know where he is and what he is doing. And then on page 116, they talk about the fears that everyone has, the non-alcoholic has, that the alcoholic will lose their job. And that very often can be a blessing. With a woman, it doesn't matter. Women will lose their job, they'll find another job. They'll get a job as a waitress. What I found is it's the guys who have the hardest time. And that's when the non-alcoholic has an opportunity to try to convince you to stop. But at the same time, you can't help the alcoholic lie about their condition. We already did the fact about children. And it also talks about in here, I'm on page 117, some of the snags you will encounter are irritation, hurt feelings, and resentment. Your husband will sometimes be unreasonable and you will want to criticize. Starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. These family discussions are very dangerous, especially to your husband. Often you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to an alcoholic. And one of the fun things in this chapter is, and I'm on page 118, right at the top. You and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious problems easier than you can trivial ones. Next time you and he have a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either one to smile and say, "This is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later." This chapter was being read in one of the meetings I was in, and after the meeting, one of the women who had a hard time staying sober, she read this section and she says, "Oh, come on. Are you kidding me? Like anybody would do that." And as a matter of fact, I've done it. And so have my sponsees, because it works. There was one time my husband and I were trying to put up a piece of sheetrock underneath the stairs. And we had contractors working at our house, and they were working outside. And I'm telling him it has to be put on, and we have to shave off part of the end so that there's a lip that can go, that it can sit on. And he's going, "No," and I'm arguing with him, and he's trying to put it in. I'm going, "See, it's not working." And he's saying, "It's because you're not cooperating." And we started screaming at the top of our lungs. And later, the guys outside who were working there, you know, they came in and they said, "Hey, Cass, you guys okay?" And I said, "Yeah." And what happened was we stopped. He said, "We'll come back to this later." I said, "Fine." And so I stayed down there and I was doing something. He went upstairs and went into another room. And I went upstairs. I looked at the time. I started making lunch. The next words out of my mouth to him was, "I just made lunch. Are you interested in having it now, or do you want me to put it to the side?" And he says, "No, I will." And we sat down. We talked as if nothing ever happened. We did not go back to that project. And we just, you know, we went on to other things that needed to be done in the house. And then about 3 days later, he said, "I want to talk about what happened." And he said, "Don't tell me what to do." And this is one of the things that is in this chapter also. You never tell an alcoholic what to do. And I kept forgetting that he was a recovered alcoholic. And I was telling him, and I'm right. And so the last thing he wanted to listen to was that. So most of the time, I didn't tell him. If we got involved in a project, I would let him take the lead in it, and I'd keep my mouth shut most of the time. It didn't always work, because very often I was right. Okay, also on page 118, it's the second full paragraph. I'm sorry, yes, the second full paragraph. "We women carry with us the picture of an ideal man, the sort of chap we would like our husbands to be. It is the most natural thing in the world. And once the liquor problem is solved, to feel that he will now measure up to that cherished vision." And then it says, "The chances are he will not, for like yourself, he is just beginning his development. Be patient." I'm going to take this in two separate things. First of all, the ideal man. I know you guys don't do this, but the women, the way I was taught by my sponsor, is to write down all the characteristics. It doesn't matter if you're married or not. All the characteristics you want in a healthy relationship. And fold the page in half, and on the other side, What are you going to bring to the relationship for each and every item? If you don't want somebody who is jealous, which is one of the things on my list, I would, before, I'm single, and I was single at the time when I was working with some girls, and I said, I ask a guy, when we're starting a relationship, I ask them outright, are you jealous? Are you the jealous type? And some of them actually said, yeah. I mean, if you're flirting with another woman, another man, and we don't do that. I mean, unless you're an idiot. You're out on a date with one person and you're flirting with somebody else. I mean, it's a doomed relationship anyway. But if you have to bring that quality, what'll happen is you'll have it there so both of you can enjoy it. Men usually send women flowers. I was in a relationship with this guy I really liked. He took me out on a fabulous date one time. And I knew where he worked. I sent him a plant. And, you know, with a card and everything. And he was the envy of the office. I mean, none of the guys had ever gotten anything from a girl. There's a lot of perks to following this stuff. One of the things about avoiding controlling people and avoiding abuse, you can't be abused if you can't be controlled. Realize that. Because there's always indications of abuse. You know, it's one of the most common ones, and it doesn't even seem like abuse, is you tell somebody this is what you did, and they say to you, why did you do it that way? Why didn't you do it this way? This is a person who is going to tell you what to do. This is a person who wants to control you. And it's the kind of thing you can't ask a person you're with, are you controlling? I mean, can you even define what controlling is? It has so many different variations. And so, like I said, these chapters are all about how to have a relationship. You know, and if you see something, the other thing is, if you see something in the relationship that you don't like, mention it. See what kind of reaction you get. You know, I want to be treated with dignity, and that means I have to give dignity. And relationships are probably the hardest thing in the world to deal with. And this is what is so wonderful about this book. And here's one of the things that my sponsor told me. I'm on page 120, and it's written right at the top. Bring to relationships what you want to get out of them. And it starts off by saying, you as well as your husband ought to think of what you can put into life instead of how much you can take out. Inevitably, your lives will be fuller for doing so. You will lose the old life and find a much better one. Okay, and it talks here about what happens if you start in a relationship, you're sober, he's sober, and one of you slips. What do you do? I've been around for a long time, and I've been sponsoring from the time I was 9 months sober. I don't know how many women I've sponsored, and I've taken probably 24 through this book word by word. And I'm sorry, I just forgot what I said. Oh, if somebody starts drinking. When I married my second husband, he was an alcoholic. He had 3 years sobriety. I had like 20. And I said to him, I said, look, we're in love. We're getting married. I'm telling you right now that if you pick up a drink, you're out of the house for a year. Because in this book, it talks about the slips, and it talks about giving the person another chance and everything. What I've seen time and time again is you can marry or hook up with a golden slipper. And at one point in the book, Bill Wilson says there should be no undue haste for the couple to get back together again. I'm not talking about the two of you go your separate ways, but I was married to my husband, so what I told my husband was, you pick up a drink, you are going to be living in an apartment for probably a year, so that I know you're not going back. And at first he hit the roof, and he went to his sponsor, and his sponsor said, she's right. Too many times, if there's no consequences for our actions, guys, then we can keep on doing it. I've seen that time and time again. Most of the women who come to me have never had this experience of the book. And it's rare that they go out. Some of them lose interest, especially younger ones, when they met the man of the hour and they're not at their fifth step where they're allowed to date. And so they'll drop me. But it's, how do you know the person isn't going to slip again? There's no guarantee. But there's an incentive. And if you don't want to do it a year, make it 6 months. But it has to be an amount of time in which you're not in contact with one another. You're not living together. And that's just from my experience, and that's what I'm passing on to you. All right? Okay, that about covers it. Okay, one other thing. I was told this a long time. When I'm working with somebody else, as long as I stick to my experience and what is in the book, I don't have to worry about giving bad advice. The minute I deviate from that, it's anybody's game. And the other thing is, in any relationship, always keep yourself in the equation. That is not from the book. That is from a psychologist. How much are you willing to take? How much are you willing to give? And what's the breaking point? And the next chapter is the family afterwards, and where there's a lot of repetition of this, and to the employer, which has specific instructions on what to do in given situations. I hope I brought you a different view, or at least one that you can embrace. Okay? And thank you very much for being here.